Today's episode is going to be a barn burner. Of course, if it's not my asshole, the opinion's not a good one. Yeah, this is the Brett Johnson Show. I can say Bible and in the same sentence. That hat and those ridiculous shirts. I couldn't wrap that in a flag and for glory, I'll tell you that. There's stuff to take care of before we get to that point. We don't want to piss off everybody. My mom, that I absolutely know about, has burned at least 5 homes for renter's insurance at that. I started to think about one's convictions. We can simply say, by God, enough is enough. We can be a better people than we are. Johnson, former United States most wanted cyber criminal, now good guy, and host of the Brett Johnson Show. Today's episode is going to be a barn burner. We're calling it the power of conviction. Before we get there, guess what? You guys may not have known this, but I like Brett's bitch, moan, and complaining segment so much, and Brian liked it, and I think Shayna even liked it. I think that we're going to, I don't think, by God, we've got conviction that that is now a permanent segment of the Brett Johnson Show. I hate them all.
They ain't no f***ing way. You don't want to hear about this bullshit. Bitch, moan, and complain. You are full of poo.
All right, so on today's Brett's bitch, moaning, and complaining segment, before we get started, I would like my viewers to know that I wear this getup for you guys. It's all for you. Now, I say that because when I signed on to record today, not 20 seconds into it, Shayna, she says, Brett, perhaps this, and she does her hand, perhaps this look that you've got going on with the hat, and she said shirts, but the way she said shirts, I interpreted it as being that hat and those ridiculous shirts that you're wearing. Yeah, it's looking to, she comes up with the reasons. You know, when it goes black and white, all those shirts look the same, Brady. And I'm like, and you know, the shows are really starting to look very similar. And I'm sitting there going, well, okay. So I guess we're going to keep the ridiculous. This is, because evidently nobody fucking knows this shit, this is the Indiana Jones shirt. Yes, I know no one saw the last film. And the film before that, The Crystal Skull, sucked. But it's still Indiana Jones. That being said, I'm guessing that I'm going to have to come up with a different look for the Criminal Thoughts. Because I'm doing this for you guys every day, every day. Well, at least twice a week. All right. Now, talking about the bitch moaning, before we get to that, see, there's stuff to take care of before we get to that point. Yesterday, I was at Auburn University. Yes. No, I'm not going to bitch, moan, and complain about them. They were outstanding. Now, they did not have a budget for yours truly, moi. I don't charge universities anyway, but they did deliver unto Bretty. They delivered unto Bretty a shit ton of swag from the different departments around campus. So I ended up with like 11 different thermal mugs, some coffee cups, lots of stickers, lots of lapel pens. The main piece they're sending to me, it's an autographed basketball by Bruce Pearl. Not bad, even though I'm a UK guy, I gotta respect that bullshit. Now, usually this segment has some lighthearted fare to it because, you know, we don't want to piss off everybody. It's funny with me. It really is. It's funny because, I did the R Snake show in Austin several weeks ago. And Robert Hansen, and I said this on a previous show as well, Robert Hansen, what he said was, I made the comment, you know, I'd like to be able to get some sort of other business up or the show up itself that I'm recording to where it's able to be self-supporting and maybe support me some so I could actually get out there and say the bullshit I want to say. And Robert, being Robert, Robert was like, well, you know, it's really just a choice. You can do it whenever you want to. Well, I've been taking that to heart, Mr. Hansen, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. So today's Brady's Bitch, Moan, and Complaining segment, we are starting out with one of the big dogs, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Full disclosure, I am a supporter of Israel. All right, not because of some sort of bullshit New Testament, Old Testament fulfillment crap like that. No, I'm an Israeli supporter because I grew up traveling the planet. My father was a captain in the military, and when I was a very young child, probably 6 or 7, they did not have a filter for their kids, which has benefits and detriments. One of the benefits was I, at a very young age, went to Dachau and got to see that concentration camp completely preserved in Germany. And Germany's very good about not trying to whitewash their past. They don't pull that bullshit. All right. So Dachau completely maintained. And to this day, I still remember one of the torture instruments that they had on that compound. And it was a pole. It was a hanging pole is what it's called. And no, you wouldn't hang the person by their necks, but you'd put their hands behind their backs and you'd hang them by their thumbs is what you would do. And over time, of course, the lungs collapse and it becomes extremely, you know, excruciatingly painful. So I grew up with that and seeing different types of people marginalized, abused, demonified. So I support Israel. I do. Now, that being said, what gets me, just because I support them, and I understand, you know, I'm a huge, when October 7th happened last year, you know, the Palestinians came over in their parachutes and motorized, you know, whatever the fuck parachutes they had, paragliders, whatever that was. When they came over, I mean, you know, saw that on the news, and I was very vocal about my support of Israel, and they needed to do something about Hamas. Over the past several months, we have continued to see Israeli troops under the guidance of Benjamin Netanyahu. We've continued to see those troops in the Gaza Strip, where evidently 35,000 civilians have been killed. Now, I get it. I get it. I understand that the Israeli government and the troops did not start that. That October 7th started that. Now, that being said, I also understand that this conflict goes back a hell of a long time. Okay? I also understand that Israel was kind of forced on everyone back in 1949, 1950s, at least in the Middle East, where they couldn't, you know, do much about it except for that war that popped off, and Israel, you know, squashed that bullshit pretty quick. The thing is that two wrongs do not make a right. And right now we're seeing in Israel's thirst and need to extinguish Hamas, we are seeing a people in the Gaza Strip being murdered. You know, 35,000 roughly is what we've got casualties just in the Gaza Strip. And I understand that there's a need to get rid of Hamas, but by God, there's not a need to kill that many people in your quest to do that. That's wrong. There's something goddamn wrong with that. You know, it's taken the United States government more than enough time to say something about it, to try to put some brakes on the atrocities that are going on that way. And I understand that atrocities were perpetrated first upon the Israeli people, October 7th. But by God, that doesn't make it right. The next thing to complain about, Brian, if you'll bring up that link for this Hunter guy. Today's one of these days where a lot of the news that we're talking about is not happy news. Take, for example, this motherfucking idiot right here, Great White Hunter. All right, so here's the thing. I don't hunt. Well, one of the reasons I don't hunt is because I'm a felon and they will not allow me to carry a firearm, which I have to say, I don't own any firearms myself. My wife is building quite an arsenal. All right. Now, that also being said, if they did let me hunt and have firearms, what I would like to, if I were a hunter, and I am not, but if I were, I would really like to hunt some squirrels with 357 Magnums, blow those little fuckers' nuts right off. Just saying. That's an old Robin Williams joke. All right, so Brian's showing us right here this Telegram channel called MetaSignal. So you'll see these coin calls, legitimate, of influencers that will say, hey, I advise you to buy this token. And because there are all of a sudden there are 10,000 people buying into it, it pumps the value of it up pretty high. If those 10,000 people fully believe in that token, then that value will stay high because even less people are selling it at that point. You have more holders overall. But you have a group of Telegram fraudsters like this guy over at MetaSignals. So what he does is, one of the first clues of a scam on a platform will be either you're not able to make comments, respond, make reply to anything that's being posted on that channel or that platform, or the people who run that platform or channel are trying to get you off of that platform, deplatform you. Because if, you know, like a romance scheme, I'm going to try to get you off of Match.com and get you on WhatsApp or some communication channel where the Match.com people can't monitor everything that's going on in the conversation. I'm trying to get you off there so I can fucking scam you, all right? This guy does not allow any comments, so that should immediately be a flag that something's wrong. Because what he says is, if you go through these texts, what he says is, he says, hey, my 35,000, 33,000 followers, we're going to buy into this token, okay? And he posts, you know, it's available in 20 hours, and he has a countdown, 5 hours, 8 hours, 5 minutes. Then he releases the token name, the contract address, and he tells people to buy into it. Now, if you'll note what happens here, and I've been watching this guy for a while, what happens is the tokens that he is saying for his crew to buy, you go over to Dex Tools or Dex Scanner, the token is there. It has liquidity. It typically has around $20,000 of liquidity and around $20,000 to $30,000 market cap at the same time. So it looks like it's a very low cap token. And it looks, because it has liquidity in there, that it's been around a little while. It's gained some legitimacy. It's not brand new. So it tends to look okay just as a surface view. Once he gives that signal for people to buy, what typically happens is the market cap within the space of 30, 35 minutes, the market cap will shoot from that $25,000, $35,000 range up to over $100,000. Liquidity at the same time will massively increase because you've got people that are buying the friggin' token, and whatever they're purchasing it with, it's some of it's going into liquidity. What this guy does is, while you're buying into it, he changes the contract on the token. So it's all Ethereum-based tokens, okay? So as people are buying into it, he changes the contract to where no one but him can sell any of the tokens that he just recommended people to buy. His site says he's got 30-some thousand followers. I kind of doubt that. But does he have several hundred? Probably. Is he getting several hundred on a weekly basis? Newbies. Yes, probably. Those people are looking for easy money because right now we're in a crypto bull run and the money is not difficult to come by. So these people are looking for handouts and come ups because they've been reading the news about all the bull runs and people made a millionaire from investing a few hundred dollars into a token. So they think they're in on something. He calls the call. They go in and buy, giving him money on the token that he owns. He shuts down every other account so that they can't sell. And all of a sudden, he's the only one that can sell. Okay. Meaning that he, you know, the token that he created, maybe it's going off at 0.0003 cents a piece because of the pump up. It's now at 0.02 cents a piece. He's selling all that stuff, transferring it back into Ethereum. Everybody else is cut off. Meanwhile, he's posting things that you can read the script. He's actually got a script here. You can read the script that, hey, it looks like we've got some, a lot of people are having trouble with the orders going through. A lot of people looks like they're having some withdrawal issues. Text me your wallet address. I'll look at it and everything will be fine. Well, what happens is you text him the wallet address. He will actually respond to you saying, I don't know what happened. Everyone else was really happy with this. This is the first time this has ever happened to us. By the way, I'll make sure on our next market call that you have first in line privileges, that you'll know about the coin before anyone else does. So if you're stupid enough to fall for that, he's going to get you not once, but twice, probably three times, because you've shared your wallet address with him. He may get you to try to connect your wallet to some service where he can drain out all of the tokens on there. So that is cryptocurrency in a nutshell. And I know I said I was going to talk about a couple other things on crypto, but I have no idea what the hell I was going to talk about. This guy, I've said this on several presentations. Understand that for me to scam you, for anyone to scam you, I have to establish trust with that potential victim. If that potential victim does not trust me, they will not give me information, access, data, or in this circumstance, cash. So, how did this guy establish trust? Well, he's got a closed off channel. He's got enough comments on the channel that he has edited out or made and not deleted that it looks like there's history on the channel. He's got 30 some thousand followers. So it looks like, hey, they must be legitimate. Okay. So that helps layer trust. At the same time, he's recommending a token that has a market cap, a low one, and it has liquidity in it, which means that you're more and more trusting on that. So it's that layered trust that's coming in that's causing you to fall for this. At the same time, it's your desire to make easy money. Okay, so that desire causes you to put reason and logic to the side. You react emotionally with this guy that tells you, hey, you're going to make 100x on however much you put into that. Put as much as you possibly can. All right, on today's From the Headlines segment, just a few days ago, we had a total eclipse. I got to tell you, I forgot all about it. I was inside at that point in time, forgot all about it. Didn't even know the fucking thing happened. Came outside, it was a little shady. That's all I know. Looked up, and yes, idiot Brett, much like Donald Trump, I did look up in the sky to see, and I didn't burn my eyes out or anything, but it strikes me, reading some of the news reports, watching CNN, I wake up every day, as people know, I watch CNN and Fox so I can get angry at everybody. CNN was really big about banging the eclipse drum. It's untelling what those animals will do. And then you had Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's a sign of the apocalypse. Abandon hope for all ye who enter here. Not that anyone wants to enter Marjorie Taylor Greene to begin with. Just saying, just throwing that shit out there. I couldn't wrap that in a flag and fuck for glory. I'll tell you that. Just told you today's show, it's something. Ooh. It's something. Look here. The thing is what fucking year are we in? All right. Are you really telling me that some lady, because of the eclipse, she thinks that God has told her to get her little pistol or rifle or whatever the hell it was and go out and shoot people. So she starts firing at cars. Marjorie Taylor Greene says that the eclipse is a sign from God that we are not living our lives right and the end is nigh. What the? Are we really that fucking stupid anymore to believe that? I mean, are we in the dark ages? Because that's exactly what some of this stuff sounds like. We can do better. We can. I know that on the Brett Johnson Show, I start these segments out and I'm raging, raising hell, trying to joke a little bit like that. But the truth of the matter is, we can be a better people than we are. We absolutely can. We do not have to settle for Marjorie Taylor Greene. We don't. We don't have to settle for AOC. We don't have to settle for Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Donald Trump or whoever the hell he's going to pick as his running mate. We don't have to do that. We can simply say, by God, enough is enough. We can say that. But for some reason, we're not. I don't really have anything else to say other than that. But, you know, I went to the Business Technology Association conference in Orlando last week. And the former president of that association, he got up and he said one thing that makes a shit ton of sense to me. And it is, don't complain, get off your ass and do something about it. Well, you know, no one's even complaining is the problem. No one's even complaining. People don't want to say anything. They just want, my guy's Donald Trump. That's who I like. I don't care what the fuck he grabs. My guy's Donald Trump. Then you got Joe Biden. Well, you know, it's Joe. We think he's still alive. We think so. No, I don't think anybody's got a stick shoved up his ass and walking around with him like a puppet. No, I think he's still alive. You don't have to settle for either one of those things. You don't. We can say as a people, you know, enough is enough. I just don't know what it's going to take to get us there. All right, on today's Art of Accountability segment, here's the thing. So I was a very late bloomer in the, you know, sexual escapades department. Yes, I know. I know I'm a bit of a sexual tyrannosaurus now. But back then, I was more on the short bus of sex. It did not happen. My first real girlfriend didn't pop up until, well, I mean, I had popped up a long time before that. But she didn't pop up and... I like that noise. She didn't pop up until I was 19. 19, mind you. A late bloomer. Now, I tried to sow my seed as much as I possibly can at that point. Up until that, not so much. But the reason I say that, she was a preacher's daughter. Yes, she was. It's strange. I start with a preacher's daughter, and then later on, I'm with a stripper. And this girl... What's interesting, and that's today's topic, you can't have two masters. I was dating her. I'm in Kentucky, mind you, and we do things a little backwards in Kentucky. No, she was not a cousin or a sister or a brother or anything like that. She was a very good girl. Her dad was a preacher. So her dad and her mom had informed me through her, hey, you're going to date my daughter. You're going to come down here and sit down and talk to me so I know who the hell you are. Okay, so travel over to this girl. Her name was Christy. Travel and see Christy, and her dad was a coal miner. So he was getting off work that evening, and finally he gets off work, and he comes in. He's covered with coal dust, and you can tell he's been working hard and everything like that. And he sits down, and he starts to talk with me. And he's like, son. I was like, yes, sir. He's like, do you go to church? And I was like, every now and then. He's like, well, if you're going to date my daughter, you are going to go to church. Yes, sir. I'll be at church every Sunday. Church is also on Wednesdays. I'll be at church every Sunday and Wednesday. Then he looks at me. He's like, you can only have one master. So I want to ask you a question. I was like, yeah. He's like, are you a servant of God or are you a servant of Satan? And I looked at him. And I was like, I didn't say it out loud, mind you. But I thought to myself, that is a fucking trick question right there. So I sat there. Now, the thing is, if you tell somebody that you are a servant of God, and then you've just told the man that you don't go to church and blah, 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 probably he ain't going to believe that. If you tell the man that you are a servant of Satan, he might believe that, but he ain't going to like your ass more than likely. And I said it. I didn't even hesitate. I was like, I am a servant of Satan, not that I like it. And he looks at me. He's like, that's a good answer. And I was like, well, I'm glad that it was a good answer. While I dated Christy for 5 years and went to church every Wednesday and Sunday and got a very good education in the book and the denomination as well. And he was a very good man. He was a very good man. Her mom was a very good woman. She acted like a surrogate mother for me. They were outstanding people. The reason I say that, and I tell you that story, is because of this idea that you really cannot serve two masters. You can't. And I apply that to my life, not just in dating this girl and going to church and a servant of God versus Satan, blah, blah, blah. I applied that lesson in my life with criminal activity. okay? Because I was a criminal for decades, decades. When I decided to turn my life around, I made that conscious decision because I knew, and here's the thing, I could go back and do any numbers of frauds right now and make a veritable shit ton of money. I don't want to do that because I've changed my life. When I actually made the decision to turn things around and I was being given help by countless people at the same time, I understood, even back then, I understood that, hey, if you are serious about turning your life around, that means that you can no longer dabble in the behaviors that you used to dabble in, that you are only going to serve one master, because if I'm doing things right and then moonlighting at the same time as a criminal or a fraudster or something like that, that makes me a hypocrite. And it means that I'm not fully convicted to this path that I have chosen because I've got a failsafe all of a sudden. I've got something that I can fall back on, that history of criminal activity that I had before. So that's the lesson that I think that people have to get, is that if you are dedicated to something, if you are trying to change your life, you know, whatever is going on, maybe you're addicted, maybe you've been abused, maybe you are the abuser, maybe you're engaged in criminal activity and you want to change things, I want you to change things too. I do. But understand that that change means that you have to give up the people, places, and things that you were doing that causes you to want to change. You cannot simply go back and visit every now and then because, as Thomas Wolfe once said, you can't go home again. You're going to fuck up unless you decide a path, stick to that path, and then go from there. And that is today's Art of Accountability. All right. Okay, so on today's main episode, The Power of Conviction. So here's the thing. You know, as everyone knows, I am very good about talking about cybercrime, why attacks happen, things like that. And I've talked a lot about what I call the three necessities of cybercrime, you know, gathering data, committing crime, cashing out. Easy enough. That's why it's never a single attacker, because of those three necessities. One guy can't do all three things. One of the things that I also talk about is what must be inherent in a criminal for them to engage in crime. And I've broken that down to three things as well. Willingness, ego, and then finally knowledge. What are you willing or not willing to do? Do you have a big enough ego that, by God, you're going to try that bullshit? And then finally, do you have the knowledge to do that act that you want to do? And I've left it at those three for a couple of years. But fortunately, as people know, I like to take these road trips, and these road trips allow me or afford me the opportunity to just engage in thought, to work things out. You know, not only shit that I'm going through, but some of the criminal stuff that's happening on the internet, or some of the scams and the way they operate. So I think about this frequently. Okay. On my last trip, I drove down to Orlando to the Business Technology Association conference. And on the way back, I don't even remember everything that I was thinking about. I do. What had happened is my mom, the day before I was supposed to speak, she calls. I was in Orlando, and I usually don't pick up. I just don't, because she's a very toxic individual, and it's always something that she's bewailing on. You know, my life sucks. It's horrible here. I need to get away. Blah. Have you got any money? Blah, 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 blah. For some odd fucking reason, I decided that, you know, it's my mom calling. Everything's going to be all right. Picked up the phone. So, and it was one of those bewailing segments. She proceeds to tell me that she no longer has a home, that she's living in a one room shack in some hollow back in Kentucky. They call it a holler, in some holler in Kentucky. And I don't know if she has electricity or anything else like that. And that everyone is stealing money from her. Now, here's the thing. I love my mom. I do. I don't like my mom, but I love my mom. I don't talk to her on the phone because of the toxicity, because of the way she tries to manipulate, because of her not ever accepting any accountability or responsibility for her life or what she's done to others. She just doesn't do that. So I try to stay away from that. She proceeds to tell me this, and that pulls at me, man. I mean, that's something, that's my mom. I don't like to see her in that position. So I'm talking to her, and she's telling me how, this guy that she's been with for 20 years is stealing from her now and using her and abusing her. And I'm like, okay. And it occurs to me as she's talking that literally she said this exact same thing to me 20 years ago. And she makes the comment again that she doesn't have a house. So I pause and I was like, well, Mom, what happened to your home? She was living in a double wide in Corbin, Kentucky. And she says, well, my home burned. Well, that gives me pause. And the reason it gives me pause is my mom, I grew up knowing how to do insurance fraud. Faking accidents, faking stolen cars, burning homes for cash. My mom, that I absolutely know about, has burned at least 5 homes for the insurance money, for renter's insurance at that. A lot of the homes that she burned, they were rental homes, and she would live there 3 months, get insurance through her insurance company, go out to Salvation Army, buy a shitload of clothes, maybe some old junk furniture, put in the home, and then all of a sudden the home burns and she collects the renter's insurance on that, much to the detriment of the actual homeowner. She's done that at least 5 times. So when she said that her home burned, I get that sinking feeling in my stomach. And I asked her, I was like, did you have insurance? She said, no. Okay. Well, usually she would tell me if she had insurance. And usually, most people might let it drop there. Well, she didn't have insurance, so obviously it was an accident, right? Well, no, it was not. Turns out that her home burned at about the same time those floods were going through Eastern Kentucky last year. So anybody who watched CNN or Fox News, all those floods in Eastern Kentucky, that's where I grew up, Hazard, Kentucky. Come to find out, when FEMA comes through, if you have lost your home, FEMA has a one-time maximum payment grant of $35,000. So long story short, my mom burned her home so that she could get a $35,000 FEMA grant and I guess try to survive from that. So you can see the problem here. The problem, of course, is this idea of instant gratification, of I can only see, my mom can only see what's in front of my face and can't see the consequences of your choices or actions on down the fucking line. Like, for example, yes, I'm going to get $35,000, but a week from now, where in the hell am I going to sleep? So she calls me and she's very manipulative, even though she's old and frail and sick now. And she says, I don't want any money from you, but if you can find me a finance company that will give me a loan. And I was like, Mom, there's no finance company. You don't have any credit. You're 77. And the only money that you get in is from the government. No one is going to give you a loan. She was wanting a loan so she could go and she wanted to buy a used trailer. She said, I think I know where I can buy a used trailer for like $3,500 and try to fix it up. And I'm sitting there going, Mom, you're about to give up the ghost as it is. And I asked her, I was like, what about, assisted living? And she was adamantly against that. And she shot back at me. She was like, well, what about your father? Did your father make it to assisted living? I was like, and I was very quiet. And I was like, no, Mom, he didn't live long enough to get there, but he was going to go. And at that point, she gives me at least a 10-minute lecture on God and how we never die and blah, 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 blah. The reason I bring that up is that was going through my head the night before I keynoted this conference. I keynoted the conference the next day, and it absolutely colored my presentation that day. Not in a bad way, in a very beneficial, more open way. All right, because I believe in getting things out. I don't believe in holding them back or sugarcoating them or anything else. So I actually discussed this on stage. I was supposed to give presentation was supposed to be, I think, like an hour, 15 minutes. I went 2 hours, and they said that was more than okay. So I was good to go. But that leads me into the topic of today's show, the power of conviction. Because on the drive back, I had all these thoughts. I was trying to process through everything, and I'm still processing through everything. And I truly believe this. I believe that we are on this planet to know ourselves, to help our fellow human beings, and to overcome whatever that obstacle, whatever you want to call it. I was referencing the Coen brothers there. You know, many obstacles. That's the what is that with George Clooney? The one where they redo the Odyssey.
Oh, brother, we're out though.
Oh, brother, we're out. Yeah, that's one of the guy that George Clooney meets that's on the train. He says, I have overcome many obstacles in my life.
You shall see things. Wonderful to tell, but fear not the obstacles in your path.
You know, that got me thinking about all this stuff. Even my mom's mistaken because she doesn't know the fucking Bible. She thinks she does, but she does not. I don't know if the woman's ever read the damn thing. I, however, have. So on my way back home, that 8.5-hour drive, I was trying to process and go through all these things. And what occurred to me, even on stage, I mentioned this. You know, she never dedicated herself to any of that I fully believe in. I fully believe that we are here to know more about ourselves, to help other people, and to overcome whatever types of problems we bring to this planet to begin with. I think that we've all got these trials and tribulations, each one of us unique to ourselves, that our journey through life is about overcoming, figuring out, working through, processing. And I really believe that if we do that, that if there is an afterlife, we will be welcomed unto it. I don't really give a damn about Christianity, about Hinduism, Buddhism, about any other fucking religion out there. I think they're all beneficial. I think there is no right one. I think that if you are an overall good person and you're doing those things, that you're not going to end up in some place called hell because you didn't follow a guy named JC and the boys. I don't believe that. And we don't refer to it as Jesus Christ and 12 apostles. It's JC and the boys. And it's not a Peter pool at St. Taffy's. It's a taffy pool at St. Peter's. I was driving back, and it occurred to me my mom had never really dedicated herself to that. She had more than often than not, the master that she served was a master of abuse and abusing other people and victimizing others and taking advantage of others and lying and deceit. That was the master that she used. And any time that this other master of doing the right thing and trying to be beneficial for people would rear its head, she would always be firmly rooted in this other place, that she would only do those things if somehow it did not take away from this. And so as I was driving back, I started to think about one's convictions. That's what I started to think about. And where it really hit was, again, I've read the Bible. Where it really hit was Matthew 17:20. And he talks, it's the mustard seed verse of the King James Bible. And here's the thing. If you're going to read the Bible, I believe in the King James Version. No, I do not believe that God directed people's hands to write the King James Version. I don't believe that. But I do like the poetry and the way that the King James Bible is written. Yes, I understand it's not normal text. It's not American English, any of the bullshit like that. But to me, there's something that's taken away from the text when you Americanize it. So I like the King James Version. Anyway, what this says, what this passage says in Matthew is it says, and Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, for verily I say unto you, if ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. So that passage kept just hanging in my head, banging around on this drive back. And as I was working through this, I started to understand some of the meaning of that. You know, I went through college. I was a theater major, English minor. I saw people that what their career paths for, like acting, for example. For those who don't know, actors starve the fuck to death. Okay. They spend a lot more time being waiters and waitresses than they do a lot of the times making money on acting. There was the guy that was on The Cosby Show a few years ago that he, you know, there was this big hubbub because the guy was working in a grocery store, one of the former actors from The Cosby Show. All right. What you see is a lot of the times, unless you're one of these big powerhouse actors that's making a shit ton of money, you have to have another job. And when you decide on a career in acting, people will often tell you to have a second plan in place in case you fall on your ass. Now, here's the thing with that. If you have a second plan in place, for like with My Criminal Activity, for example, if you have a second plan in place, to me, that is almost a recipe for failure. I'm anticipating that my turning my life around, doing things right, being an actor, whatever that is, I'm anticipating it's going to fall on its face. Because I'm anticipating that, I'm preparing this second opportunity that may be in place. Well, it seems to me that what you're actually doing is you're not dedicating yourself 100% to that goal that you would like to achieve. Instead, you're pretty much dedicating yourself 100% to the second less desired outcome. All right. So that power of conviction. And I started to think about all these people coming through with these things. And I'm not an Elon Musk fan. I'm not. I don't think that Elon Musk is a super genius like Wile E. Coyote. All right. Even though some of his shit comes off like it's from the Acme company, just look at that goddamn Cybertruck that's falling apart and rusting hours after it's friggin' delivered. I am not an electric car fan. Not likely to be one anytime soon. You know, he's got Tesla. He's got the SpaceX. He's got the Link that's up there. He's evidently cracking monkeys' heads open and throwing some sort of microchip into that in the hopes that he can do that with human heads as well. So he's doing all this stuff. It occurs to me that if you look at a lot of the reason that Elon Musk succeeds is because when he says something, he proceeds forward with that, and he has a conviction for that. He doesn't have a plan of failure. He says, and he acts as if it's going to, by God, work. And more often than not, well, there's a reason that the guy is worth a couple $100 billion right now. So it's that power of conviction, that idea that I am going to will this into place, that by God, I want to be an actor, so I am going to be an actor. All right, so we have these things. If you think about it, you've got opinions, you've got beliefs, and then finally, you've got convictions. You've got an opinion, which is basically just anybody. It's like an asshole. Anyone can have an opinion. Of course, if it's not my asshole, that opinion's not a good one. That didn't sound exactly like I wanted it to sound.
We're keeping that in.
I think we should probably keep that one in. As I said, today's show is one hell off the rails show. So, but what I'm saying is, you know, opinions are on that lower level thing. You know, you can slap someone's opinion away. No one really cares. It's different than a belief. All right. You keep that opinion long enough, finally, you're going to develop a belief about something. All right. Now that belief is not nearly as concrete or persistent as the final step of a conviction. What happens is you hold that belief long enough, and you're fully convinced of that belief. And then finally, over time, that belief becomes a conviction. That conviction is much harder to deter. That belief, however, you can slap that around a little bit. That opinion, nobody gives a shit about your opinion. All right? The belief is stronger. Conviction is the strongest. If you have a conviction that you want to achieve something, you know, for example, I plan on stopping working by the time I reach 60. I'm hoping that some of the stuff that I've got churning around right now will allow me to do that in the next 2 years. But my conviction, my belief is 2 years. My conviction, by God, I'm stopping at 60, period. Every action that I do is an anticipation of that ceasing once I turn to 60. Now, that belief that it may be a couple of years, that belief may turn into a conviction over the next several months as we see how things go. But right now, it's just a belief. That's what I'm getting at. You know, this idea, are we fully committed to doing the things that we want to do in our lives? Are we committed to that? And a lot of the time, the answer is no, we are not. We would like to be committed, but, you know, the everyday life choices, the things that are going on, all that shit kind of interferes with these things that we would want to do. And I think that what I'm trying to get at, and I spent a lot of time, I know it doesn't seem like that when I'm talking about it, but I spent a lot of time thinking about the power of one's convictions. You know, when we're kids, and we're going through school. A lot of school is about institutionalizing that child toward a particular line of thought. And there's several stories. There's songs about it. Another Brick in the Wall Part 2. All right. That's one of these things about school destroying children, having them all basically be the same cookie cutter type of mentality. And there's something wrong with that. You know, there's a story about these kindergarten kids, and the teacher tells them to draw a flower, and this kid is going, by God, he's like Picasso or Van Gogh or some bullshit like that. He's like, yeah, 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 yeah. And the motherfucker doesn't look anything like a flower at all. Then the teacher comes up, well, Billy, that doesn't look all right to me. Here's you a picture of a flower. Draw this. Come to find out, all the kids are drawing the exact same damn flower from that picture at the end of the day. That institutionalizing of a child at that age, not only that, but the interactions of the parents, you know, the parents, because maybe they have not been fully committed to their future, they then pass those doubts onto their children. You couple that with the way society works with social media platforms, and all of a sudden you've got a group of a demographic of kids or individuals, human beings growing up that they lack the capacity to be committed to really what they would like to do in their lives. So they end up settling a lot of the time. That was what was going on in my head all the way through. And you get these very unique human beings that, like Elon Musk, and there are other people like Steve Jobs was like that. I'm not a Steve Jobs fan either. Donald Trump's like that. And I'm not a Donald Trump fan either. But you get people that are fully committed to the outcome that they want. And you see them, no matter what obstacles pop in their way, you see them barrel over top of those obstacles because they are absolutely fucking convinced of the truth of their fate. And they act like it every single day. That is what Jesus is talking about with the grain, the faith the size of a grain of mustard seed. No, I don't think he means, by God, you can believe that mountain's going to fly up and go away. I don't think he means that. I think it's an allegory. I think he's telling you that, hey, you know, act as if, behave as if this is going to happen. To me, that's almost the entire message of the fucking Bible. Yeah. This is the Brett Johnson show. I can say Bible and fuck in the same sentence. And I don't care if you believe in the Bible. That does not mean that you should dismiss some of the truths that are in that book or in any religious scripture. There's good damn things in the fucking Quran. Yes, I can say Quran and fuck at the same time. All right. There's truth in all of these texts that you can get whether you believe that or not. There's no reason to dismiss these texts. All right. You see what he's talking about. If you just have that faith and act as if you have it, believe in that, be convicted to that, you can allegorically, or, you know, whatever, comparison wise, move mountains. I think that's what we see with Elon Musk. That's what we see with Steve Jobs. That force of will, that conviction is what matters. And for some reason, there are so many people on this planet that have gotten away from that. And I wanted to leave people with that thought, because that's what I'm thinking. That's what Dipshit Brady thinks every day. My name is Brett Johnson. We're going to close it out. Stay safe out there. Stay secure. Stay vigilant. More importantly, this matters. It matters. At the end of the day, and everyone knows what this is, at the end of the day, just do the right damn thing. My name is Brett Johnson. I want to thank you guys so much for sitting through this show with me. If you like it, subscribe. If you don't like it, subscribe with the knowledge that this is not the typical show. All right? All right, I'm Brett Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.